Good morning, KRFY listeners. This is Julie Prochinski, and I'm here with Julie Calamine on our weekly Garden Life Show. Good morning, Julie.
Good morning, Julie Prochinski. It's so nice to see your bright and shiny spring face. You've been in and out of town. It's nice to have you back just in time for the annual meeting.
Yes, just in time. This Friday is our annual meeting, 5:30 to 7:30, a collaboration with the Sandpoint Music Conservatory, and it should be an awesome evening.
I think so. And refreshments and a nice little summary of what's happening here at the station and music. It's going to be a great evening. I hope listeners will put it on their schedules.
Definitely. Everyone's invited.
That's right. Well, a couple of things before we begin our interview. I'm going to start with the first one, and this is a request for folks to sign up for a blood drive. Bonner Title, who is here in town at 115 East Lake Street in Sandpoint, is going to be giving the gift of life, which is blood drive. And that's happening on Wednesday, May 10th. It starts at 9 a.m. and it will go until 1:30 p.m. It's May 10th, and you can sign up now. I'll give you two ways to do so. You can call Kim at 208-416-4420, or you can email her, kim@bonnertitle.biz, B-I-Z. So think about that. It really is a gift of life and a great thing to do.
That's right. The blood situation is kind of dire in the country, I've heard. So the more we do, the more we help, the more we help ourselves.
Yeah, I haven't given blood in a long time, and I'm planning to give blood for this one. It's good to get back in a schedule of giving blood. It's very good for you, too.
Yes, yes.
Supposedly.
Especially if you're like from the northern countries, they need to give a little blood.
That's right.
Right, Paul?
Right. Well, quick weather report, and then we'll introduce some very interesting, fun guests for this morning.
Absolutely. Well, today, slight chances snow showers between 1 and 2. Well, that's pretty exact. Then a chance of rain showers. Some thunder, Carrie, there might be thunder, and it's partly sunny with a high near 47. Little bit of wind, but nothing really to speak of, so 30% chance. Tonight, a chance of rain and snow showers before 7. Then a chance of snow showers between 7 and 11. Partly cloudy with a low around 27. South wind up to 6 miles an hour and then becoming calm in the evening. So it just sounds like the same every day. Wednesday, slight chance of snow showers between 11 and 2.
Wow.
Then rain showers after 2. And then Wednesday night, partly cloudy, low 29. So at least those evening temperatures are coming up a little bit.
That's right. Well, this is spring wet weather. And
absolutely.
What does that mean? It's time to be thinking about planting and gardening and watching the soil temps. And with that, I'm going to go ahead and introduce our really great guests this morning. We have this morning Karen and Paul Olson. They are the owners of Astra Garden, which is a retail plant garden site, and Sightline Design, which is landscape architecture design services. Hello, Paul.
Good morning.
And hello, Karen.
Good morning.
All right. I'll start with the first question. It's the easy one. Karen and Paul, too, you're the owners of the nursery, and Karen, you are the designer at Sightline. Just tell us a little bit about yourselves, how you came to be doing this work, and how you came to be in Sandpoint.
Well, gardening has always been drawn to gardening. My mother was out in the yard making the yard beautiful flowers, and my dad was growing giant heads of lettuce, and I was just fascinated. And when I was in high school in FFA, I joined the horticultural part of the FFA, and we did a booth at the fairgrounds in San Diego, California, and we won first place. And colleges were trying to recruit us to come to their design school, but at that time, I didn't know that was like a real profession. I didn't know you could make money and a living at it, you know. And so as being practical, I came from a family of educators, and I was on the biology track and going to be a biologist. And so I kept on that track, but always at my home, in every garden that I went, you know, when I was a young ski bum going from home to home in my 20s, I had these bulbs of flowers that I would take with me, and I'd plant some in each house and then take, and they'd grow, and I'd take some of them and onto the next house. So I've always kind of had this little trail of gardening everywhere I've gone.
Mm-hmm. But then later along, you went back to college.
Yes. I decided when my children went off to college themselves that if I didn't do this now, that it was not going to happen. So at age 50, I went back for my master's degree in landscape architecture, and I got a degree in a bachelor's degree and a master's degree in landscape architecture. And then when I got out, the economy had collapsed and there was no work for that sort of a luxury type profession. And so I just started my own firm. And luckily, the Heartwood Center was in the middle of being refurbished, and I got on that job. They needed a landscape architect. My first job out of school, here I am designing their monumental steps, their parking lots. We kept all the water on site with rain gardens. It was just a wonderful, wonderful project. And it was preservation of historical with new environmental ideas combined. It was just fantastic. And so an architect and an engineer took me under their wing. And by the time I finished that job, I felt like I could take on anything. So I had to manage contractors. I had to get out there and, you know, make sure all the elevations were correct and the parking lot was draining and the sidewalks were good for ADA. So everything, you know. So it was quite an education, the first job. I was very, very lucky. And after that, people sought us out. So we've been busy ever since. So it was
amazing. That's a great beginning.
I know it. What a great first job. I'm really impressed to hear that story. Well, and then when did the retail business come along?
Well, after about 7-8 years of doing landscape and design, it kicked in after the started picking up, when the economy started picking up, the business started picking up, and then it was first me and then one more other person, and then now we're up to four. But we couldn't get a lot of the cool, there's a lot of wonderful nurseries in town, but there's some cool plants that I just really wanted. And I wanted a lot of natives, and I wanted food plants and different things. And we couldn't get those regularly unless we traveled to go get them someplace else. And I thought, honey, I need an office in town. Let's go shopping for real estate. and we need a nursery. And we came around the corner, and there was 924 Superior Street with an old warehouse, two weedy lots, and we're like, we are home. This is perfect. And so we went and bought it that afternoon and never regretted it because it's the perfect place. We have great neighbors. The city was thrilled that we were fixing it up because it was just an eyesore. And we'd always go down there and ask, can we do this? And they're going, yes, please.
And I assume this is where Paul comes into the story.
Yes.
Because I see you over at Astra Gardens working away.
Yeah, it's been a continual building project since we bought the property. In fact, we're expanding Karen's offices and finishing out the visible side of the building with doors and windows and access to a new office area. When I built our office in the building, it was meant for one, maybe two people, and now there's four and five in there, so they need more space. And then the nursery area is still, continuing to grow and develop, and we're just wanting to fine-tune it. And it's just been a real pleasure to convert that property into something that people love coming to.
Yes, and that the building that you're converting was original. That was there.
Yes.
So you kept that old shop or whatever it was, and you've converted in the interior of that.
Yeah, that was a machine shop that was built in the 1970s.
Okay.
And almost, had been there.
Almost everything in our lives is repurposed. You should have seen our house when we got it. It looked like it had been blown up. And this place too.
All right. Well, let's go into some just concepts of design. What are changes that you've seen in design norms or technology in your years of landscape architecting? As far as the changes that are happening in our climate, what changes have you seen that have changed your business?
Well, North Idaho intrinsically has kind of a whims, like the climate, the weather is just nuts here. And anyway, has always been
true.
It's gone to longer extremes of cold, longer extremes of cold, longer extremes of hot, and some things even native are struggling. The birch particularly are hit really hard with the borers. They don't have enough trigger pressure, which that's the water pressure inside them to push the borer larvae out. So they're, more and more of them are getting attacked. And birch, except for in some of the wettest zones, don't exist in a lot of our forests, like up on the hilltops like they used to. Mm-hmm. And you'll see a lot of them with the dead tops when you're hiking. That's what that is.
Mm-hmm.
So it's birch borers. I've seen people, they have a habit of not taking care of like their arborvitaes, you know, the good old arborvitae.
Carefree, no maintenance.
Dead, you know, because they're used to not taking care of them.
Yes.
So we need to pay attention to our plants when they start showing signs or, you know, if you, it's been, it was like a drought for 10, 12 years here. And if you drive around, you will see some 20-foot tall arborvitaes dead, you know, or at least like the first part of the hedge where it's drier, dead. And that's really unusual to have hardcore bulletproof plant.
Yeah, and I've noticed that, and I thought I had different ideas about why it might be happening. One was I thought, are we getting more salt in our streets or something? But mm-hmm. it's not that. It's too dry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because with the hot comes so much dry weather in the summer,
mm-hmm.
more watering than you've ever had to do.
Right.
Yeah.
And people aren't used to it. They're used to that carefree, just I don't need to pay attention to that plant, but you do now.
I agree.
So. Yes, more watering.
Mm-hmm.
More watering. Is there any way that you capture water? What do you do for your watering situation there? Are there, do you have cisterns or there at the Astor Designs or do you use city water?
We use city water. We do have an underground water catchment the size of a swimming pool under our nursery.
Oh.
And we put a pipe down it like a well. And we are working on a filtration system and pump system that we can utilize that water. And we'd also like to utilize some roof water in cisterns for watering. The problem is that that water's there in the spring, which when we have a lot of water and it's raining, and then when it's raining, you don't need to water anyway to catch the roof. So it's been, you know, trying to balance that out. It's like when you need that alternative water, it's not there, you know, unless you had a giant storage. And we're only two tiny city lots, but... mostly we'll water early in the morning so it can soak in.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want to water in the afternoon when it can just evaporate.
Right. And no overhead water. You don't have any overhead sprinklers
or anything.
No, we don't
do any. We hand deliver all our water so it goes right into the pot.
Do you set up watering systems in your design work?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to use mostly drip. For one thing, overhead spray, we have a lot of fungus up here. And that, especially powdery mildew. And if you spray your overhead plants, a lot of, like your nine barks will just be covered in fuzz. And then you waste a lot of water. It's evaporated. The plant, it gets on and magnifies on the leaves. You get burn. So delivering the water to the roots where it's needed and where it can soak in slowly and deep is a much better conservative practice, and it's better for the plant, too.
Yeah, and it's not that hard to set up, really.
No, it's very it's like Tinker Toys.
Mm-hmm.
So you can get the plug and play stuff. All the stores have it, you know. And a great place is Horizon down in Hayne Lake has everything. It's a wholesale place you can walk in, and they'll help you.
What was that name?
Horizon.
Horizon.
Okay. Lake. But we have locally.
Yes.
There's a
Depot is where we got all our
Home
parts.
Depot has it all, and
North 40 a little bit.
Well, Karen, I'd like to stay on the subject of climate change and your work for a little longer and talk with you about what you think about in terms of design with changing climate. What kinds of concepts and planning do you put in your consideration when you're designing, whether it's for a residential or business or whatever type of design you're working on?
Well, we've tended lately to go towards the more hardcore plants because, like I said before, it's extremes. It's extremes cold, extreme hot. And if you put a plant that's fragile or needs a microclimate in a commercial design, it's not going to get the attention or protection it needs. And so you pick out a very specific plant palette of hardcore plants. And really, with even residential, we're all so busy. we don't spend our weekends in our yards anymore until we're retired, you know. I would love to spend my weekend in my yard. But we're also busy working, and we're not working. We're skiing, we're climbing mountains, we're hiking, we're biking, we're kayaking. You know, we're not at home puttering around anymore. And so you have to design for that. You know?
For sure. And do native plants play a big role, or do you mix it up? What do you kind of look at for plant choices?
Our designs are a mix. I love to integrate food into the garden and native plants. Even with the native plants, though, some really like moist, some like shade, some like sun. So you have to pay attention. Just because it's a native plant doesn't mean it's going to be bulletproof and survive everywhere. They all have their own set of requirements. So, but on a whole, the pollinators and the wildlife recognize those plants, and they love when you add those to your garden.
Pollinators is an important point mm-hmm. there to draw them in and keep them happy.
Mm-hmm.
So comparing a city garden to a country garden, what are the considerations like? Do you take fire in consideration? Do you take the land work? What happens there, Paul?
Well, it's turned into, in Sandpoint anyway, we have moose in town and the deer in the woods. So, you know, there's those two considerations for when you're picking out plants and helping people to find what works. The only thing you can do in town about the moose is to fence them out.
Yes.
And what we've done at the nursery is we have a 7-foot fence, or they treat us like a salad bar. And, you know, of course, anywhere in the rural areas, fire is a consideration these days. And, you know, a well irrigated landscape with, you know, like we're talking about, a mix of natives and cultivars. With the woods, you know, thinned out, or, you know, just the fire-wise concepts of, you know, clearing out around your house, because it is a much more of a concern these days.
Yes.
We're having fire season every year, and hopefully this year with the wetter winter, we'll, you know, maybe have less of that.
Yes. Do you build a decent fire break around the property, or is that the landowner's?
You can design that in, you know, to a landscape design, but I think it's, you know, on all landowners, you know, to protect their, you know, property.
Yes.
And get with the people that can tell you exactly, you know, how to do that.
Will you plant away from the house then, or is that even a consideration for your planting designs?
Well, I'm not the designer.
Oh, okay.
But,
yes, dear.
I'm not the designer, but, you know, depending on the property, how far out people are planting, you know, a lot of places, lakefront, you know, they have a minimal amount of space. So they've, you know, all the considerations to how they're going to use the property, you know, with their fire pits and outdoor areas for, you know, get-togethers, mm-hmm. and, you know. Mm-hmm. So you've got all that. So how far the design and planting goes is, you know, up to the individual homeowner.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right.
Is there anything new in the world of hardscaping that has been exciting and you've been using in your designs? Anything in, you know, in the way of patios or fencing that's really cool and new?
Well, we've been using pervious pavers quite a bit. So people's driveways can be pervious, and patios and walkways, which is wonderful. And we've been using a lot of metal, like for fencing and grid fencing and just growing vines up. It ends up being easy to put in, reasonably priced, and lasts forever. Mm-hmm. So people are really into this no maintenance thing. And so I've been trying to get a plant palette and a material palette of things that look great, are friendly to your budget, and will stay looking good without you being out there painting, maintaining all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's not vinyl, and it won't burn up. I like that idea.
I'm not a fan of vinyl.
Yeah, it's hard to look at that.
Yeah, I don't even think it looks good and new. So.
I had heard about a new type of paint that goes on asphalt that changes asphalt from black to white. So it doesn't absorb the heat in the cities and kind of keeps the cities a lot cooler. Have you come across any of those kind of designs or any changes there?
We are getting the opportunity. There's a church in Kootenai that wanted their parking lot painted. So and use part of their parking lot for outdoor living gathering space. And so we suggested a lighter color so that it's not this big heat island.
Yes.
And people are comfortable in it. And parking lot and hardscape paints have been used in landscape architecture for quite some time. There's some beautiful, really fun, artsy, colorful playground type, you know, things in plazas that it can be used for. I mean, it's just only limited by your imagination. Over at the library in Sandpoint, we did the design for their community garden over there, and I talked them into keeping. There was a slab where the Quonset hut used to be, which is huge hardscape, and there was a big debate, should we take it out? Why don't we paint a mural of Lake Ponderay on it? It'd be like a teaching area, and really, hardscape in our muddy springs are a premium, and the kids can get outside and they can play on it. And so it was turning that old relic into something useful and then beautiful, too.
Yeah, that's great. I was out of town for a while and down in Mexico, and the colors down there just have really changed my whole attitude toward living space, mm-hmm. outdoor living space, and just mm-hmm. any color you can possibly imagine, and mm-hmm. murals, and
right.
and like you say, painted surfaces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Beautiful.
One other thing that I think is great about the Sandpoint Library, and I hope I have this right, they've got a little pollinator garden too, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's go back to that for a moment, because pollinators, it's getting to be that time of the year, and they're so important. Julie and I will be having an interview with the Xerces Society, which is the Society of Pollinators, before too long. And just wondering, is that top of mind with folks you do designs for? Or are they thinking about it more and more?
Mm-hmm. We are having more and more requests, and we have seeds for pollinator plants that you can purchase, and also plants. But more and more people will come in and say, well, do the bees like this? Except for, you know, there's a consideration for some people who are allergic to bees. And then they're like, we don't want anything blooming. You know, everything is green, ferns, boxwoods, you know, that sort of thing. So that's another consideration. But most people are like, oh, I want the birds. I want the bees. I want the hummingbirds. And the bees are already at Astor. I mean, we got some hellebores off the truck that were blooming, and the second that those were put on the table, here come the bees. They were ready.
Yeah, the bees are around mm-hmm. earlier than we think, and they're on the trees sometimes, and we don't see them, the little mm-hmm. blooming trees, but it's so mm-hmm. nice when they come down and mm-hmm. start looking for things on the ground. Mm-hmm. Love it.
Well, should we take a quick break here, Julie, and introduce the song by Simon and Garfunkel?
Sure. We'll take a quick song break and see what other topics we want to cover, and then we'll be back with more from Astor Garden with Karen and Paul Olson here on Superior Street in Sandpoint. All right, Julie, you picked this one, and it's a good one. Simon and Garfunkel, April Come She Will. Here she comes. All right, and that was Simon and Garfunkel with April Come She Will. What a sweet song. For those of you just joining us, this is KRFY Community Radio for the Idaho Panhandle. I am Julie Calamine, and I'm joined by, well, really, Julie Perchinsky is the host, and I'm joining her, so we should get it straight, Julie. And those of you who are just joining us, we are talking with Paul and Karen Olson. They are the owners of Astor Gardens here in town on Superior Street. And Karen is a landscape architect who's been working for a number of years and has had some very interesting projects.
All right. So let's get down to the nitty-gritty, Karen. Give us a itinerary of all of your projects through the years and your favorite ones and why you've enjoyed them.
Maybe not all of them, Julie. That might take 2 hours.
I was going to say, how long do you have? So, well, we've done a variety of commercial and residential projects. Some of my favorites are one we did up on, I can't name a private client's names, but I can tell you where the commercial ones are. We did one up on Eagle Peak that was just lovely. you could look out into your garden and not see the fence around the garden because the house was part of the fence. So you could look out your kitchen window just right into the garden, unobscured by the fencing. And the fencing in the background was covered with raspberries and blackberries. And there was a pergola, a steel pergola for the shade. So when you're out gardening, you can sit and have a glass of lemonade and, you know, just, and the view, it's like being in an airplane of the lake, created an outdoor living space where you could sit in a strolling garden in a spa area. So, you know, some things that are really small and simple are just the greatest spaces to just immerse yourself in and enjoy. And then to large things, we did a medical center out in Ponderay, the one with the big 100-foot long berm out there. You can't miss it. And there's water storage there. There's the trees have really taken hold, and it's just they take very good care of it. So it's thriving. It's one of the best commercial landscapes in town as far as being well taken care of. So I enjoy going by that in the fall and seeing the autumn flame grass doing its bright, brilliant red with its big fluffy seed heads blowing in the breeze, and the flowers on the trees in the spring on that berm. We've done the Fiesta Bonita restaurant, and also in Ponderay, and they wanted to create a beautiful seating area out front that wasn't, it was so open to the road and the cars and the traffic, so they wanted to create this little courtyard feel. And so we stuck with the color of the restaurant, that nice terracotta red, and created planter walls around it and shade structure above it to make it a shady, cool place to enjoy your meal. And did the courtyard for the Fat Pig restaurant, the green walls, the green roof, all of that area. And again, we've just been so lucky getting clients that allow us to play and do these really fun spaces. And we repurposed all the bars were concrete that were in the Ponderay Winery, and used those for benches outside in the new courtyard. And constructed a green wall that was modular, so you could take it out piece by piece and replant it, and created a fire pit area, just different spaces people could enjoy. And that's the most fun thing I see. Like when we were doing the medical center, this rock came off the dump truck, and it was this perfect rectangular prism about 4 feet wide and, you know, 6 feet long and 2 feet deep, and I thought, this looks like a bench. This is perfect. Let's put it by the pergola, by that little garden where people come out the door. I said, somebody will be sitting there eating their sandwich by noon. And a little bit past noon, we look over there, and there's two people eating their sandwiches, and we're just like, yes! But that's just so wonderful to see people enjoying something you've created.
I this came to mind as you were talking about some of your commercial and then also residential designs. We haven't talked too much about residential ones yet, but mm-hmm. you know, design is so essential for making a good garden, mm-hmm. and of course the implementation, the installation, and then the maintenance. But just a question: how many people? How affordable is it? What are the options? Can people have you do everything? Do they sometimes have you do design and then they work on the install? How does that work generally?
Well, we're strictly design services, and then we have a list of the contractors that you can call to and see, you know, who you click with as far as working with. And landscape can go from a potted plant on your patio, you know, to sky's the limit. You know, you can have the whole outdoor resort, you know. So there's something for everybody. And I think outdoors is just, you know, it's so therapeutic to work in the garden and just to be in nature. And so there's a place and a budget for everybody on that spectrum.
You know? One of the things that has happened in the last couple of years is that outdoor room concept where you were just talking about looking out of the mm-hmm. kitchen window and mm-hmm. having that room mm-hmm. out there that you're looking at, that you're creating, and it's constantly changing. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the beauty of gardening mm-hmm. too, is that right now we're in the process of the move. So then the syringa gets moved there, and that holly's got to be mm-hmm. moved closer to the other holly, and all those kind of things that happens in the spring. It's just, It's constantly changing.
It's very dynamic.
Yes, very dynamic. Mm-hmm. And to see your installations grow year to year to year, especially when they're cared for, and you do so many important parts of the installation, the water wells, you know, a place for the water to run when you have a sidewalk or a driveway or, you know, those are important concepts.
It's huge. The things that are, there's the things you have to do that are the structural construction building blocks of any site. And if you don't, if it doesn't function well, who cares how beautiful it is? You know, you have to have something there that's not going to flood, that you can walk on, that's not too steep, that's not too sharp, that's just safe. You know, safety is first. Safety and function are the first things I look at. And then I look at circulation. How are you going to get places? You know, are you going to get be able to get that wheelbarrow back there? Or do you need to get a vehicle back there? Do you have somebody that needs to get wheels down there? You know, you don't know. And that's what the main thing I do when I go to a site is I listen. I listen to the people. I listen to the site. You know, I listen. And then you design for those people in that place. It's not something you impose on somebody. It's all about listening.
I agree, but I also think that the concept of outdoor space, outdoor rooms is so key, and I bet that's important because people might have a list of plants or whatever that's important to them, but don't necessarily have that ability to conceptualize how it's going to fit and how they'll move through it and where they'll spend their time. And that's such an important aspect of being the designer, which you are.
Well, you take all those pieces, people tell you their favorite plants, what they want to do out there, what activities, do they want to have outdoor dining, do they want sports, do they want to bird watch? There's so many. Do they want to sit quietly, read a book, you know, you want to hang in a hammock? What do they want to do? And so you take those activities and create a space where they can enjoy those activities.
Well, speaking of space, Paul, let's talk a little bit about the nursery, all of the things you've done there. You have a gift building, a gift shop?
Yeah, we have the little retail building in front, and we've added some pots this year, so something we haven't had in the past. We have a table full of, you know, deck pots, and there's, you know, wind chimes, you know, other things. And again, last time we did an interview, I did a call out to local artisans who do outdoor type, you know, either wood benches, fire pits, you know, anything that you would think would, you know, be good for our store, please come down, visit us and talk about it. A man from Dover, a gentleman brought in a bunch of willow trellises last year. And we have just a very few of those left because they went so well. So, you know, we're trying to take on more of that. And in the reconstruction of you know the building as we go along, I would like to eventually have a little retail space that is more substantial than what we have in the little building out front.
And you have a greenhouse there too?
Yes, we have a timber frame greenhouse that we keep the more sensitive plants in, which is full of our first load of plants right now that came in. So we're just trying to keep them from getting hit too hard with the cold.
Yes, no kidding. These early days are kind of nerve-wracking.
Yeah, a little bit.
So do you start seeds or are you buying most of your bedding plants?
We purchase almost all of our plants from regional and local growers.
Okay.
And we do start a little bit of stuff at home, and we will bring in bare root trees and root them, you know, and then later in the season, bring them to sell in the nursery.
Great.
It gives us a better variety of trees that we can't get otherwise if we take them as a bare root.
Sure. Sure, and cheaper.
Yes. They're a better deal all the way
much
around.
Much better deal. Yeah, you always have such good products in there. And I hear there's something new at Aster Designs, Karen.
Yep, we're going bananas.
They're going bananas over there.
We literally found a Zone 5 banana tree. It does not produce edible fruit, but it has 6 foot long, 2 foot wide leaves and will grow 12 to 15 foot in a season. And you can leave it outside if you cut it back to 2 feet tall and mulch the heck out of it. But or it makes a great patio plant that you can bring in and out too.
As Zone 5 banana tree.
Yes, it's from Japan.
From Japan.
Yes.
Woo! I'm gonna get one.
It's fun. People came in because we opened April 1st, and people came in and they go, "Are you fooling me?"
I think I'm gonna put mine right by my cedar tree. Wouldn't that be ironic? The cedar contrast banana.
I can imagine some crazy things happening with a banana, with a winter hardy banana in this area.
True.
What other favorites? You must have some favorite things that are coming into the greenhouse that people might want to snatch up.
Oh, hellebores. They're blooming right now.
Yes.
I just love hellebores. The deer won't touch them, so everybody's safe with them. They have beautiful variegated leaves, some of them, all colors, and they bloom. As soon as you can see their little heads out of the snow, they've got a flower, and it lasts for months. It's just, they're wonderful.
That is a wonderful
plant.
And then
strawberries right now, of course.
Oh.
Great to put in. Mm-hmm. We have berries, and we have blueberries, strawberries, raspberries, blackberries.
Good time for berries. Mm-hmm. I got a shovel in my ground. I was surprised last week. I did a little, like I said.
Finally.
Yeah. Yeah. That was great.
And we say finally because if it's too wet, we can't get in there, can we?
Well, it was frozen.
Yeah. Right, frozen. That too.
Right.
But wet, we can't be turning things when it's super wet either.
In town here, it's a very clay soil, so you've got to wait a little bit to let it drain down. And the other thing, you know, that when Karen was mentioning plants, we have a little prolific of fern for your shade areas that it's kind of a copper color when it starts out, and then it, you know, turns green as it grows larger. Beautiful. You know, there's a lot of cool plants. It's just fun to come hang out in the greenhouse. And, you know, we'd love to have people just stop in and, you know, get a little green fix.
Yes,
totally. Yes. It's nice and warm in there and plants are getting going. It gives us a little hope that we're going to have a garden season. Well, as we start to come to the end of this interview, Karen and Paul, either of you, I'd be interested in either any stories about, you know, great designs that have made a difference for somebody or just things that really get you revved up when you're doing garden design.
You know, I keep going back to the Heartwood Center. It was my first project, but it has like over a 5,000 feet of like impervious surface there. And we kept every drop of water on site. And the more water we can keep on site, whether it's your residence or your business, it doesn't overtax our water purification systems that go into the river. And I'm very passionate about that. I mean, and it recharges our aquifer. So we have rain gardens there, and you don't notice it. It doesn't make the place soggy. It just, you have these beautiful rain gardens. And at the worst, when the ground was very, very frozen, so I still go visit it, I heard a little trickle. We do have an overflow into the city storm drain. Just a little trickle when the water was knee-deep. I don't know if you guys remember that, when we had flooding downtown. But that's the only time it barely trickled over into there. And it was because the ground was frozen and we were getting rain. And but otherwise, we keep all the water on site.
Wow. And that Heartwood Center has really stood the test of time. Even that wall has just evolved and really come into its own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's gone from more sedums to almost like a flowy, grassy wall.
Yes, yes. It's very interesting watching how that's evolved.
The squirrel has been gathering the coconut fiber on it for its nest.
Oh,
so.
No.
It keeps sticking. Little burr.
That's the only thing I've seen needed help. It's just really, and all your different, the plants that you chose, and everything is so interesting in there. And the overstory, of course, of trees is always easy, fun to work with.
Saved the ancient maples there. Yeah,
yes.
Those are beautiful. And then we use a lot of natives there. If you go explore those maiden gardens, you'll see a lot of natives. There's currants, there's all kinds of little flowering plants. And,
that's great.
And then just some fun ones. One of my favorite is that Joe Pieweed. It has this giant bowling ball size purple flower in the fall after everything is done, which is a lot of fun.
Joe Pieweed. I love that name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's cool. Well, Paul, what revs you up about working in the nursery over there? What gets you going?
Well, you know, I've always had jobs where I've interacted with people from way back, a long time at Schweitzer, I worked for co-op for a number of years. I was out and about in a propane truck, and I got to meet a lot of people. And so I think probably my favorite thing, I mean, beside the plants and having a beautiful place for people to come, is interacting with people and getting to know more people in the area and, you know, what they're all about, where they're from. I've always been interested, you know, what brings people, like our first question here, what brings you to Sandpoint? And for me, that was the beauty of the area. We used to travel through here as a child. I came with my dad. He was a salesman. And we came through Sandpoint, and it's told myself, I'm going to live there.
All right. Wow. All right.
That is great.
And your daughter graduated here.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yeah. Raised my daughter here. Uh-huh. We've raised Karen, his two children were raised here. We, you know, put our kids through, and they, you know, I think they did better for it.
I had had a childhood here.
Yeah.
Well, I kind of did, I guess.
Ski and play.
Still going.
Yeah. Oh.
Well, fantastic. This has been a great conversation. It's really got my blood going for gardening and what's happening coming up.
Me too. And just to think about design is so exciting. You know, the fun of planting and maintaining is great, but just having those really great ideas about what you're going to do with your space. It's got to be fun, Karen.
Mm-hmm. I love it. Thank you for having us.
You're most welcome.
Yes.
We may not have mentioned, in fact, I know we didn't, but we appreciate Astor Garden for being an underwriter here at KRFY. That is such a great thing that you do to support community radio. Thank you.
It's a pleasure.
Our pleasure. We love your programming.
Thank you. All right, listeners, this has been KRFY, the Tuesday morning show with Julie Perchinsky and me, Julie Calamine, and we have had the honor of interviewing Karen and Paul Olson, the owners of Astor Gardens and Sightline Design.
Yes.
All right. Okay. Well, off to a song break, and Julie and I will chat a little bit more about what's going on, and then more music. So first off, the Avett Brothers, A Father's First Spring.